From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Tuesday edition, there could not be an issue that more clearly divides the left from the right in America as blue-led states advance bills that would push America toward infanticide, and red states with conservative leadership adopt laws that strike at the very heart of Roe v. Wade. Kentucky is the latest state upholding life and revealing really the hypocrisy of the left by advancing a measure that prohibits abortions based upon sex, race, color, national origin, or disability. Now, that might sound familiar because it almost mirrors federal anti-discrimination law. The ACLU is already moving to sue to stop the law. Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin is expected to sign the bill into law, and he joins us in just a moment. And speaking of his hypocrisy, the infamous Southern Poverty Law Center has fired its co-founder for alleged hashtag MeToo offenses. The SPLC is now bringing in former First Lady's Michelle Obama's chief of staff for an overhaul of the entire organization. So how much longer will the media treat this partisan harassing organization as a nonpartisan authority on hate? Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin joins us with that answer. And speaking of abortion and the Democratic Party, the question is there room in the Democratic 2020 field of presidential candidates for a pro-life candidate? Well, Fordham University professor Charles Simosi he's actually asked that question, and he's going to join us with an answer later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Let me remind you of the campaign, the End Birthday Abortion Campaign. You can go to TonyPerkins.com, find out more about that. All right. The American Civil Liberties Union is suing, as they're saying they're going to sue to block a Kentucky measure that would ban abortions, based on race, gender, or disability status. Now, this is a law very similar to this one from Indiana, is currently before the Supreme Court, or the Supreme Court is considering reviewing that case. Now, as I mentioned earlier, the law very closely follows the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which prohibits discrimination based upon race, color, religion, sex, and national origin. Joining me now is Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin, who grew up in a family of eight and now has nine children of his own, five biological and four adopted. So I think he understands something about the value of life. Governor, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be on with you, Tony. It's a pleasure to speak with you today.
Well, Kentucky's leading the way on many fronts, economic development, but also on the life issue. You have proudly worn the title as one of America's most pro-life governors. Tell us about this latest effort to advance the sanctity of human life.
I mean, to me, it really has so little to do with what people try to impute upon it, which is that it's somehow moralistic or religious. It is, to me, a basic function of human decency and what humanity should stand for, what the role of government should do, and that is to give a voice to the voiceless and defend those unable to defend themselves. And so for many reasons, not the least of which is my faith, I do strongly believe that every life is precious, that we are created in the image of God. I believe this to my core, and it seems reprehensible to me that we would not defend every human life, give every single person, regardless of their race, regardless of their gender, regardless of any perceived disability, an opportunity to pursue the best possible life they can. And so I will fight for that at every turn. I'm so grateful to serve in a state where overwhelmingly our legislature feels the same way.
Now, describe exactly what House Bill 5 does. Now, it's been labeled as a eugenics bill, but I find it very tightly drafted and quite frankly ingenious in that it really does track the anti-discrimination laws of the federal government. And you're just laying that out with addition to the disability, because we're finding about 67%, I think, of children that in the womb are diagnosed with Down syndrome are aborted before they're born. And this deals with that issue as well. So explain in greater detail what it does.
Sure. In very short measure, it covers three things: the sex of the unborn child, the race, color, or national origin of the unborn child, or number three, a diagnosis or potential diagnosis of Down syndrome or any other disability. That for any of those three reasons, it would be illegal here in Kentucky, upon this becoming the law, which it now is, it would now be illegal to abort a child, to take the life of that unborn child for any of those three reasons. Now, it's hard for me to imagine how anybody could defend doing otherwise. I mean, who would say that, no, you know what, we want, based on that child's race, to be able to selectively kill those children or that child's gender or whatever the case might be. It's absolutely repugnant to me that anybody would justify killing a child based on race or gender. But there are people, including at the ACLU, who think that that is a worthy use of their time and resources.
Now, Governor Bevin, do you see this issue of life, given what's happened in New York, what the governor of Virginia basically embracing infanticide? There clearly is a dividing line in America today. And the states where you have red states led by conservative leadership, you have blue states, they seem to be going 180 degrees in terms of the difference on this issue of life.
It's sad but true, and you think about this, probably the most famous amendment that we have seen in this nation related to this issue coming out of Congress is the Hyde Amendment. It's known by name to people who don't even fully understand what it actually meant. But Henry Hyde was a congressman from Illinois who I believe was a Democrat, was he not? I can't remember whether he was or not, but my point is it was supported by Democrats and Republicans at the time that it came out. And it was once very possible that you would find people in both parties who respected the value of human life. But that is no longer the case, I think, in large measure because of policies coming from the very top down. And so it's been a litmus test within the Democrat Party where, sadly, it would be hard for somebody to be taken seriously as a pro-life candidate in the Democrat Party.
Yeah, it's quite amazing. I don't think there's any room anymore in the Democratic Party for a pro-life candidate. And what's interesting, I've watched this progression over my 25 years in politics to where there was a time when you would have half your Republicans would be pro-life, some of them not so pro-life, some pro-choice. Now in Congress, I believe this to be the case after the 2018 midterm election, that there are no longer any openly pro-choice Republican candidates. And there are only two that I'm aware of pro-life Democrats in the Congress. And so that clearly is that dividing line between the two parties. Now, I don't think that's necessarily a good thing. I think competition on these issues is good. I would like to see the Democratic Party advocate for the sanctity of human life. But it seems like anything goes against an unborn child, whereas they embrace all kinds of crazy stuff outside the womb. And even, you know, there's a bill going through to protect kittens, but yet not children. Yeah. It's a sad day.
It is a sad day. And here's to me, this is about as nonpartisan an issue as there should be. It's the sanctity of a human life endowed by our creator, as our founders recognized, with certain inalienable rights, that among those are life itself. And that was understood from the beginning of time. Ask any 4 or 5 year old what that is growing inside of a pregnant woman's belly. They know immediately what that is. The shock and horror of a young person when they first understand what an abortion is instinctive, because they know what this is the taking of a life. And you're right, the hypocrisy, the tortured sense of justification, it's hard for me to understand. We've got people who literally will defend any number of things except a human life, and they will come up with excuses for why this modern-day version of eugenics is being carried out. Margaret Sanger wanted to rid the world of certain undesirables, people of color, people who were immigrants, people who she considered disabled to the point of not being productive. And we have a responsibility to stand in the gap against that kind of reprehensible policy.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. My guest, Governor Matt Bevin of Kentucky. discussing a bill just signed into law that would prohibit abortions based upon the race, the gender of the baby, or fetal normalities, any type of, you know, whether it's Down syndrome or others, which really leads to a number of parents aborting their children. Oftentimes, these tests are not even accurate. Governor, you have a couple of other pro-life bills that are working their way, I believe, through the legislature as well. You've got a heartbeat bill and some other bills. So you have a pretty strong legislature there that's on the side of the unborn.
We do, and I'm grateful for that, because the people of Kentucky are strongly supportive of human life. And I'm grateful to be the governor in a state where it's recognized not only by the people, but by those that they send to our state capitol to pass laws. And indeed, the fetal heartbeat bill, which I have already signed into law and for which we have already been sued and for which a federal judge has already put a stay on this for 14 days. It's interesting, though, and this is what is striking to me, Tony, is that the hypocrisy, the very same judges that will put a stay on an execution because they want to make sure that there is no innocent life that will be lost. And I appreciate that they take that stance, because we should be absolutely sure. But the very same judges that would be quick to do that would take the exact opposite stance and would be quick to put a stay on a bill that would protect an innocent life. Their argument is, well, we have to be sure. Well, why do we err on the side of the life that exists on one side, but err on the side of taking lives on the other? The very same judges. You can't have such disingenuousness and be taken seriously. It is for reasons that are deeper than just the facts themselves. This is it's a physical issue, it's a spiritual issue, it's a moral issue, but it cuts deep into the hearts and souls of mankind. And there is a reason why it's dividing America, because it is about life itself.
Well, and I could not agree with you more. There is more to this, because when you stand back and you look at this issue of life, where clearly there's hypocrisy. On one hand, you would legislate or order certain things, but when it comes to an unborn child, it's hands off. And I do believe it's because it is a spiritual issue, it is a moral issue, but it is one that we must get right. And I am grateful for leaders like yourself that are willing to do the right thing, even though the lawsuits will come, the scrutiny will be there, the hate will flow, but nonetheless, you're doing the right thing for the right reason. And Governor, we commend you for that.
Thank you. I will say this, and I'm grateful to be placed in this position. But we're on the wall. We need to sound the alarm. It's our responsibility.
Well, you're doing just that, and we appreciate you coming on the program to talk about it today. Governor, look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you.
Governor Matt Bevin of Kentucky. All right, speaking of hypocrisy, we're going to talk about that more with the Southern Poverty Law Center. They had to fire their co-founder, Morris Dees, for workplace harassment and who knows what else. But now they're bringing in the former chief of staff to Michelle Obama to do a top-down evaluation. Sounds a little partisan to me. Will the media continue to use them as a source of hate groups and whatnot? We'll talk about it next with General Jerry Boykin. Don't go away.
Picture it. Majestic beauty all around you. Wildlife, deep blue waters, glacial mountains, lush forests. Can you imagine the majesty of creation at every turn? Discover Alaska with FRC. You'll enjoy every moment of this unforgettable experience. Juno, accessible only by sea and air. Ketchikan and its impressive collection of Native American totem poles. Glacier Bay, a breathtaking wonder. All this, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital. You'll hear directly from FRC President Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, and Michelle Bachmann. This is no ordinary vacation. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Be rejuvenated as we deepen our relationships with God and each other. Don't just get away, Get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise, July 7th through 14th. Call 844-872-5155 to register today or visit us online at frc.org/Alaska.
In recent news, we've seen the left's disregard for life. They've gone beyond defending abortion to now defending infanticide. We've seen the push for legislation in New York, Vermont, and Virginia that would allow abortion even on a baby's birthday. And if an abortion fails, to withhold medical care from the baby born alive, causing him or her to die. This is infanticide. In the left's most recent act of disregard toward human life, we saw each Democratic senator running for president vote against a bill that would protect babies born alive. Help us end birthday abortion. On the day of a baby's birth, the first article placed on the baby is a thermal hat with blue and pink stripes. That's our hope for every baby. But there are no federal laws in place to protect all babies born alive from being killed outside the womb. To show your support for the life of all babies born alive, visit endbirthdayabortion.com. For a donation of $9, we'll deliver one baby hat on your behalf to U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to send a powerful reminder that babies should be welcomed with warmth.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is @TPerkins. All right, you've no doubt heard this news by now. The Southern Poverty Law Center last week firing its co-founder, Morris Dees. Been around for a long time. I mean, he started the organization, 82 years old. But they fired him for misconduct. And it's because the staff complained of discrimination against women and people of color. Now, this is interesting because that was their original mission, was to stamp out racial hatred, civil rights abuses. It could be that they've gotten all centered, all focused on advancing the LGBT agenda. But, you know, they've held themselves out as an arbiter of, you know, what groups are legitimate, what are not, you know, going so far as to going into schools, pushing this LGBT agenda. When parents object, they label these parents groups, hate groups, just like they've done a number of Christian organizations. Well, to do a top to bottom examination of their workplace culture, less than a week after they fired Dees, they're bringing in Michelle Obama's former chief of staff. Now, talk about partisan. Now, the question is, will the media continue to hold them up as this nonpartisan arbiter of legitimate groups? And whether or not, because of all the harassment and hatred, apparently, that was going on within the walls of SPLC, can they really label what is a hate group? Joining now to talk about this is Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, Executive Vice President here at the Family Research Council, former commander of the Army's Green Beret, 36 and a half years in the United States Army. General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, I'm glad to be with you today, Tony.
Does this come as a surprise to you that the Southern Poverty Law Center, A, fired the co-founder of the organization, and then B, are bringing in Michelle Obama's former chief of staff to do a top-to-bottom evaluation?
Well, I'm at the point now where nothing surprises me with regards to this organization. But, Tony, we've known that there's a hostile work environment there for quite some time. Not only have we actually had at least one call from an employee that had been there for a long time telling us how bad it was, but we have also been watching what's being posted on Glassdoor, which is this website that allows people inside an organization to post comments about the leadership and the environment, the work environment, that is. And we have been seeing some very, very atrocious things going on there. So we were not surprised, I think, when it was announced that they were taking action against Morris Dees. And as you said, he founded this organization in 1971 with a guy named Levin. And so for them to fire him, it had to be a very hostile work environment. And what brought it to a head was one of their senior lawyers, a black female, resigned and then wrote a letter to all the staff there just talking about how hostile this environment was and why she was leaving. And I think ultimately that forced their hand because you can't keep that quiet for too long.
I find that, very revealing that you have an organization that was founded to, reportedly founded to advance civil rights. And they did do some stuff on that in the South in particular, where there was gross abuses of civil rights, particularly of African Americans. Yeah. But now, this is not the first time this has surfaced. As you said, we've gotten information from those inside, but there's been a lot of public stuff written about it. And we've done a lot of research on the Southern Poverty Law Center since they have held themselves out to be an arbiter of what organizations can legitimately speak to policy issues. But to be an organization that was founded to advance the rights of African Americans, to consistently and repeatedly have these allegations made that they were discriminating against people of color in their own organization, I would think that the media would have to step back for a moment and question whether or not they can continue to take them as a legitimate organization in terms of being a resource for the media.
Well, you would think so. And you would think also, not just the media, but you would think that these big donors that like corporations, big corporations that contribute millions of dollars to the Southern Poverty Law Center would now have to take a step back and say, are they really credible anymore, given that Morris Dees has a history of this kind of thing, by the way. And if you go back to his divorce court in 1994, there were some abysmal allegations made against him by his now ex-wife, not the least of which was attempted sexual assault on his stepdaughter. Now, my question is, was that ever followed up? I mean, you would think if something like that came out in a courtroom that there would be an immediate follow-up by law enforcement, and we can find no evidence that it was followed up. But the other thing is, though, you then have to say, well, that was 94. Why would they allow him to stay in there with these serious allegations against him without at least some investigation to clear him, and we can find no evidence that that was ever done?
Well, I know, General, we've seen these articles, we've read these court papers, but now you have the organization itself acknowledging that this was taking place inside. This, to me, would lead the media to question. I mean, I think they should be forced to step back. Not just the media, as you point out. You have these corporations that not only give them millions of dollars in money, which they're sitting on, $350 million plus, but they're also used by groups like YouTube, Amazon, and others as a resource in terms of what groups are hate groups and such, which have an effect on free speech and the free exchange of ideas.
Yeah, and they have, I think what you said earlier was they have really become primarily an arm of the left, and their LGBT agenda is their number one issue now.
General Boykin, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to join us on this. I'm sure we have not heard the last of this.
No, thank you, Tony.
All right, General Jerry Boykin, Executive Vice President here at the Family Research Council. All right, coming up next, is there room in the 2020 Democratic presidential lineup for a pro-life candidate. There's none so far, but is there room for one? We'll talk about it next. Don't go away.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right. A tremendous shift taking place in the minds of Americans on their as it pertains to their view of abortion, especially since the New York governor, Governor Cuomo, celebrated and embraced a bill that moves America toward infanticide. And, of course, we've seen other states. We were talking about this earlier with Governor Bevin, how you've got blue states pushing abortion, expanding it. You've got red states that are pushing the sanctity of life. I mean, this could not be a clearer contrast. Well, how's this going to play out in the 2020 election? I saw a very interesting piece today that, or I think I, well, I read it today, in it by Professor Charles Camosi, who at Fordham University, political science, or actually theology, talks about the Democratic lineup and whether or not there's room for a pro-life candidate. And I just thought this makes for a fascinating conversation, and so I invited him to come on the program. Professor Camosi, welcome to Washington Watch.
It's my pleasure.
I read your piece. I actually think it's very much on target. I would like to see the two parties more aggressively and competitively bid for pro-life vote. Unfortunately, we really have one party that deals with life and one party that deals with abortion. And there's very little crossover. But give our listeners kind of your analysis of what you see playing out or what could play out.
Well, first of all, it's important to keep in mind there are 20 million self-identified Democrats who also identify as pro-life, and they have virtually zero constituency. They're just begging for somebody to give them a reason to vote for them. As you already pointed out, the current crop of presidential candidates are somewhere between bad and horrific on abortion, And the basic argument I make in the piece is there's about, I don't know, 115 of them at this point. If there was just one pro-life candidate, they could get millions and millions of votes, not just from Democrats, but because it would be a primary situation, 20 states have open primaries, so independents and Republicans could vote in those primaries. Pro-life independent and Republicans could vote in those primaries. And that person could get a significant number of delegates because, let's face it, I think it's more like 15 or 17, these 15 or 17 candidates are competing for table scraps because there's so many people running in terms of delegates. So I think it would be an exciting time to have a pro-life Democrat kind of rock the boat a little bit.
But, Professor Camosi, what we see happening, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it appears that the Democratic candidates are almost trying to outdo one another in their extremist view on abortion. I've not yet seen one of them distance themselves from what happened in New York or from the comments of the Virginia governor.
Yeah, in some ways to the contrary. Beto O'Rourke was asked about this twice in the last 2 days, I think. And he was asked about third trimester abortion, and he said he said, well, this is just a woman's decision, and did the classic non-answer. 18% of U.S. Americans want abortion to be legal in the third trimester. It is just horrifically unpopular in the United States. Anybody that wants to just say, yeah, third trimester abortion for whatever reason, let women do what they want, let doctors do what they want, doesn't understand the American electorate. They certainly don't understand the American electorate in states like Wisconsin and Michigan and Ohio and Pennsylvania, the battleground states that whoever is going to be president needs to win. And so it's just this, in addition to it just not being a battle of ideas, it's just a stupid electoral strategy because, frankly, if they want to win those states, they have to have a different position. They just do.
But could it be, Professor Camosi, that they're blinded by the money that flows into national politics? Because Planned Parenthood, one example, has become a major contributor to political campaigns.
That's true. That's probably the answer for many or most of them. But Beto O'Rourke, just what did he make? $6.1 million in the first 24? That's not from Planned Parenthood. That's from small donors donating online mostly. And if pro-lifers were to do the same for a Democrat candidate that was pro-life, we could raise similar amounts of money. So if someone like Katrina Jackson, for instance, who is a state rep in Louisiana, African-American pro-lifer, spoke at the March for Life, was the candidate, I have no doubt the pro-life movement would totally come to her aid and give her lots of small donations online. And over time, she could actually become a player.
I think there's two ways. I think that's one of them. I think you're absolutely right. I think if there was a grassroots movement, although the cost of these federal races, presidential in particular, are astronomical. There's one other way. Can you stick around for about 2 minutes so we can finish this conversation on the other side of the break?
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay, great. Because I like the idea. I would like to see a pro-life Democrat run. Now, the Republicans probably don't, but I think it would be good for the pro-life movement to have a discussion of the priorities of this. So Charles Camosi is going to stick around, and we're going to finish the conversation with him, and then we'll open up the phone lines and have a conversation here about it. So don't go away. More Washington Watch to come on the other side of the break. Stay with us.
Picture it. Majestic beauty all around you. Wildlife, deep blue waters, glacial mountains, lush forests. Can you imagine the majesty of creation at every turn? Discover Alaska with FRC. You'll enjoy every moment of this unforgettable experience. Juno, accessible only by sea and air. Ketchikan and its impressive collection of Native American totem poles. Glacier Bay, a breathtaking wonder. All this, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital. You'll hear directly from FRC President Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, and Michelle Bachmann. This is no ordinary vacation. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Be rejuvenated as we deepen our relationships with God and each other. Don't just get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise, July 7th through 14th. Call 844-872-5155 to register today or visit us online at frc.org/Alaska.
In recent news, we've seen the left's disregard for life. They've gone beyond defending abortion to now defending infanticide. We've seen the push for legislation in New York, Vermont, and Virginia that would allow abortion even on a baby's birthday. And if an abortion fails, to withhold medical care from the baby born alive, causing him or her to die. This is infanticide. In the left's most recent act of disregard toward human life, we saw each Democratic senator running for president vote against a bill that would protect babies born alive. Help us end birthday abortion. On the day of a baby's birth, the first article placed on the baby is a thermal hat with blue and pink stripes. That's our hope for every baby. But there are no federal laws in place to protect all babies born alive from being killed outside the womb. To show your support for the life of all babies born alive, visit endbirthdayabortion.com. For a donation of $9, we'll deliver one baby hat on your behalf to U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to send a powerful reminder that babies should be welcomed with warmth.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy, from unicorns to the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. In FRC's analysis, 10 Myths on Abortion, join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to our other free resources, go to frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. All right. Professor Charles Camosi, he's the Associate Professor of Theological and Social Ethics at Fordham University, and he's the author of a book, Beyond the Abortion Wars, A Way Forward for a New Generation. He's written a piece that we're actually talking about today, and you can find it at TonyPerkins.com. There's room in the Democrat 2020 field for a pro-life candidate. And that's what we were discussing before we went to the break. Professor, thanks for sticking over the break. And I was looking at the numbers of the 2016 presidential race. Clinton spent $768 million, Trump $398 million. Of course, he self-funded a large portion of that. Clinton raised a lot. In fact, a lot of it came from the abortion industry. I do think that certainly in the primary there could be a good challenge put together by a candidate, but I think the other way is a self-funder. If you had a wealthy business individual that made a lot of money in the business world that was pro-life, they could make a dent in the Democratic primary. What do you think?
Yeah, that would be something too. I mean, that's the world we live in, right, where people who are wealthy get to play in ways that people who are middle class or something else do not. But let's be honest, Bernie Sanders made a huge run last time around without that kind of money. He was, again, funded by these small online donations. Barack Obama eventually got big money, but he was kept afloat when he was first going at it in his campaign by small online donations. I think this is a way that, like you said, it may not win the general election. But it's certainly a way to mix things up, and by golly, we need to mix up the. We can't have one party be this extreme on abortion. It's just terrible for the pro-life.
Now, Professor, one of the areas is not only in the presidential field, but if you look at the party's platform, we were discussing earlier with Governor Bevin, the Hyde Amendment, going back to Henry Hyde, who the year after Roe v. Wade. Place that rider on the appropriations bill to prohibit tax dollars from funding abortion. I mean, just in the last cycle, I was on the Republican Party platform committee writing a large portion of that platform, and the Democratic Party, you know, going head on in trying to remove the Hyde Amendment and restrictions of federal funding for abortion, in fact, going the opposite direction. So even the party establishment, and I'm just wondering if they would even allow a pro-life voice in the room.
Yeah, that's something I take on in the Federalist piece that you read and tried. I mean, it might be the answer is no for that, but it also might be that somebody you know, in that situation would be able to say, you know, we're going to go the Bernie Sanders route. The Clinton machine didn't want Bernie Sanders there. The DNC didn't want the Bernie Sanders there. And those small online donations really did allow him to circumvent that. And we now know post facto that the machinations were hot and heavy trying to keep him out of it. And he still did what he did. So I don't know. It might be foolish, but I wonder if, especially if the pro-life movement is 100% behind this person, if that can be circumnavigated the way the Sanders campaign did.
Well, and you make the point in your piece as well that because of the Bernie Sanders challenge and how he was kind of locked out the process of the party, essentially trying to keep outsiders outside, the rules have been changed. And there's probably a greater opportunity this time around for someone like a Bernie Sanders to make it in and through the process.
You might know more about this than I do, but it sounds like superdelegates played a huge role the last few election cycles, and that's been tamped way down. And DNC kind of had egg on their face when it was revealed just how badly they were kind of put their thumb on the scales here. And so you're right. I think there's at least a chance that somebody on the outside could make it in.
So let me just ask you, it wasn't in your piece, but I just want to ask you this question because you've written on the issue of abortion, you've tracked this issue. What do you see in the future as a nation as it pertains to this issue? I mean, right now, I don't see how the sides could be more be further apart. I mean, I think it's 180 degrees when you look at their policies and actions. Do you see that changing?
Well, I'm not sure about the sides. So in Washington, and I teach in New York City, I think there's a lot of extremism in those two towns. But if you look at middle America, if you just look at the average person, they really have complex views on abortion. They're actually quite confused in some cases about what they think about the issue. So before week 12 of pregnancy, about 60% want abortion largely legal. After week 12, about 70% want it illegal. And after week 24 into the third trimester, almost 90% want it illegal. So we have an electorate that isn't really pro-life or pro-choice. The labels just don't really fit. The extremists, though, are the ones who are driving the discussion. And what I've been trying to do in my work, in the book Beyond the Abortion Wars, I lay this out, is let's, as a pro-life movement, can we focus on that middle? Can we focus on the 80% middle, which has complicated views and not engage as much with the extremes, and try to do the best we can to meet those voters which are confused or have very complex views and say, hey, we got something for you. We got a 20-week ban. We got paid family leave. We got not discriminated against disabled children in the womb. And all these other things that are, as you know, and I played an active role in, are so good and actually are supported by broad majorities of people. But when we play the game of, you know, us versus them, life versus choice, fight to the death in Washington, we often miss those people who are gettable, I like to call them the middle 80%.
You mentioned in your piece, the Marist poll, that, again, post the decision in New York, or the law in New York that Governor Cuomo signed into law, the shift, a very significant seismic shift on this view of whether people describe themselves as pro-choice or pro-life. My interpretation of that, professor, is that people are rethinking it based upon how it's been described. And now, you know, as you said, many people are confused. But when you have a governor like in Virginia that, you know, so callously described what would happen to a baby that's been born if the parent didn't want to keep it. And I mean, I think that's caused some people to rethink not just the labels, but the whole issue in and of itself.
Yeah, I think there's really no other explanation for it other than that. I mean, it's a 17-point swing in the Marist poll in 1 month, and now pro-life and pro-choice are tied. I sometimes wonder what pro-life and pro-choice even mean. But in general, this is, you have to say, a 17-point swing the month after everyone is talking about late-term abortion. What else could possibly explain it? Interestingly, from my perspective, I'm on the board of Democrats for Life. We got very excited about this poll because it showed that Democrats led the charge and the change. So Democrats are the ones who led the change, and it was younger Democrats, millennial Democrats, which were even more dramatically affected over the last month or so. So, boy, isn't that something that's hopeful?
It is. Very, very interesting because that younger demographic. But what will be interesting going forward is that from going back to the political front at the national level, really the left has kind of locked arms on all of these issues across the board, and there's very little light between them, whether it be, you know, the abortion issue, religious liberty, LGBT issues. They're kind of one and the same at the national level. And so it'll be interesting to see how voters, you know, pick and choose their way through these, and candidates willing to break ranks, so to speak, at the national level. So it's going to be fascinating to watch. But very interesting piece. And Professor Camosi, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your thoughts on this.
Nice talking with you, Tom.
All right, Professor Charles Camosi. You can read the piece. Go to TonyPerkins.com. I think it's a great opportunity when people are stepping back and saying, hey, I just don't know about this. It's pretty radical. And I think people are rethinking it. Now, it would be helpful, I think, if the Democratic Party was open to a pro-life perspective. I mean, when I came to Washington 16 years ago, there was quite a few Blue Dog Democrats. Those were socially conservative Democrats, many of them pro-life. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, the number like 40 keeps coming to mind, like 40 pro-life Democrats. And they're down to about two now. This 2020 field of candidates is going to be interesting. All right, I'm going to take a couple of phone calls here. All right, 866-372-7234. And I'm going to go to Ohio where Bob is on the line. Bob, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yeah, hi, Tony. Thanks. Yeah, my comment was that, you know, just like Trump was really an outlier in 2016 against a, you know, big, large Republican field, you know, a pro-life Democrat could really do really well against the rest of the people kind of the same. And I'd be really excited about that, have the abortion issue up in the debates, and, you know, the moderators would have to ask the questions about it and get that right out in the forefront.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. And I think if not, they're going to avoid it. I think, Bob, the challenge has become that the Democratic Party has gone so hard to the left. You know, it was in 2012, I think it was, when they kind of had removed God from the platform. And that became a big they've become increasingly hostile toward religious freedom. They've become, obviously, no room for a pro-life view. And so a lot of people of moral conviction have left the Democratic Party. They don't find that there's room for them. So I think it's going to be harder and harder, even though there are voters out there that would still like to vote for a pro-life Democratic candidate. I think it's just getting harder to work your way through the ranks of the party. Bob, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate the thoughts. I think there's a huge opening for a candidate in the Democratic primary in particular, as Professor Camosi was saying, somebody that can raise money online and launch an effort. I wonder how that would go. Be interesting to see. And I do think competition is good. I'm very grateful that the Republican Party has taken up the banner of the pro-life community. in advancing that issue, especially right now. They're working hard to get this Born Alive Survivor Protection Act voted on in the House. And they have to, the discharge petition is going to be effective probably the first week in April. Now, this Nancy Pelosi will not allow this to come to the floor, so they have a discharge petition. That means if 218 members of the House, which is the number that's needed to pass it, sign the discharge petition, then there will be a vote. And that's a part of our push of End Birthday Abortion. That's the End Birthday Abortion campaign. You can go to TonyPerkins.com. It's there at the top of the page. And we're going to send 90,000 of the little thermal baby, newborn baby hats to Nancy Pelosi so that she cannot miss it. It'll be a very visible message that these children should be welcomed into the world and protected under our laws, not aborted on their day of birth, which is what these policies do. So if you'd like to be a part of that, go to TonyPerkins.com and join with us in sending that message. Let me, before I go to my next caller, folks in California, we've got this, just got this from our friends out in California. Outraged parents are planning to rally again at the Capitol in Sacramento over this crazy K through 12 sex ed program. It's this, I mean, it was nearly pornographic. The rally is set for Thursday, March the 28th. At 10 a.m. So for our listeners in California, mark your calendars, Thursday, March 28th, 10 a.m. Be a part of that. Find out more. Go to thecaliforniafamily.org. All right, going to take one more call here. Let's go to Don in Missouri. Don, welcome to Washington Watch. Go ahead, Don. I don't know. Do we have Don? Are you there? I think we lost him. Oh, well. Don, maybe we'll get you tomorrow. This issue of life is not going to go away. My prediction, you heard it here at Washington Watch, that the issue of abortion and the sanctity of human life is going to be a major issue in the 2020 presidential election. The lines could not be clearer on any other issue. And I think it's going to continue to move in the direction that it's in. Theoretically, it'd be great to have some Democrats jump out front, talk about this issue. I think it only helps the issue. But I think what you're going to see is more and more red states led by conservative leaders advancing the sanctity of human life, challenging Roe v. Wade. And then you're going to have the left challenging Roe v. Wade, too, in its current form. From the court, making it even more extreme. East from west. That's what we're going to be seeing in the over the next year leading into the 2020 election. All right, folks, out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. Hope you'll tune in again tomorrow for more Washington Watch. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.